one of our most important jobs in life, not up there, is to try to understand how to keep ourselves separate from the other nations of the world. How do we stay away from those ideas? And within this week's parsha, within the context of this week's parsha, what we call hukos ha'akum. What is considered hukos ha'akum? The ones that are around us. And for that reason, a kippah has been an absolute must. I think everybody understands that concept and takes that concept to heart, that you can't even imagine walking around without a kippah. It just doesn't happen. People don't do it. Even though technically it's not even a mitzvah, if that. Right, we're dealing with a hanhaga tova, even though the Arizal says that it was usher to be able to walk around without a covering on the head, or to say a Kaddish Baruch Hu's name without a covering on the head. We're not talking about any deal, right? So probably not even a Durabana. We're dealing with a hanhaga tova, but it's anathemic to all of our natures to walk around without a keep on our head, to wear tzitzis, to have tzitzis on our beged, to buy a four-cornered beged in order to give ourselves tzitzis, to wear tzitzis. This is also something that just takes us as almost as a chov loyav, something that our nation does not do. We don't take off the tzitzis. We don't take off the kippah and payas as well. To have payas down to the cheekbone, for it to be down to the cheekbone, not be less than a 2 on the shavers that we use. Those types of things are things that we take for granted. They honestly are things that we take for granted. Because these are mitzvot, whether it's a d'oraisa or an haga tova or whatever it is, they're things that we're makbid gomer to do just because these things make us seem a little bit different. The truth is, some people look better with their head shaved just a little bit. I personally think most people who are bald look a lot better with a kippah on their head. But it could be, right, that people have really, really nice hair and they wouldn't have a kippah on their head. Perhaps they'd look even better through that. But it doesn't matter to us. We all know this. It's obvious that this is what we're going to do, and we're going to make ourselves a little bit different. We may share the names that the other nations have. We may share our language with other nations, and we may share our clothing with other nations. Those types of things, 3 of the chumras that Klal Yisrael kept when we were in Mitzrayim, when we were in Galus Mitzrayim, those 3 things were taken away from us, and that's true. But we definitely have things that keep us apart, that set us apart, and kippah, tzitzis, and payas are just 3 of them, 3 of the many things that allow us to be our own nation in and of itself. But there are so many things that we don't even realize could be issues. We don't even think about. Because you just assume, going in, that they're just things that we're used to, things that they're, come on, why is this even a problem? When Moshe Feinstein was asked, it's in Chelek Chetz, it's a question whether it should have been printed in the first place, but at the end of the day, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked, if it's considered hukos ha'akum to go to a baseball game. Is it hukos ha'akum to go to any sports event where you have tens of thousands of non-Jews around, except the Mets game where it's probably tens of thousands of Jews and a couple non-Jews together with. But in most places, you're going to have tens of thousands of non-Jews around. Is it okay for a Jew to go to these events? And at the end of the day, Rav Moshe Feinstein gave a chiddush of a psak that it's not hukos ha'akum if it doesn't have a siva within the context of the religion. If there's nothing else, if it has no shaykhus within what they're doing or what they want, then it's possible that wouldn't be considered like hukos ha'akum. But it does seem strange, right? To sit at a Cubs game with everybody else there, and everybody has that single solidarity of the single red sea and a blue cap, sitting all together. When you go to playoff games, especially I think in the NBA, go to a playoff game and everybody has to wear the same shirt. They put a shirt on every single seat to make sure that everybody is wearing that shirt together. So in the Bulls, it's sea red. In certain other places, sea white, sea green. That you have this whole bunch, everybody together. It does seem strange because it does seem that we're equating ourselves with everybody else there. But there certainly is no religious aspect to it, no matter how much we worship these heroes of basketball and baseball. There's no question it's just around, and that's why Rav Moshe seems to say that there is no real problem. We have to realize there's still something a little bit up with this. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, when it brings us down, says that hukos ha'akum is going to theaters and circuses with the other nations of the world. And granted, the theaters of nowadays are not the theaters of back then, but ours might be a little more tummy. But there's no question it's not the same thing of what they did back in the day as what we do now. But let's think for a second. Let's take that movie theater as just an idea. You can watch a movie on your own. And a funny scene, maybe, you'll chuckle a little bit. Maybe you'll crack a smile while you're watching it. But when you go to a movie theater with other people, now granted, I have not been to a movie theater with other people since 1996, so I'm not positive, and some of you are not born yet. So I'm not positive that this is a great example, but I'm pretty sure it is, because I'm pretty sure I remember it pretty well. You go there, and it's amazing. You laugh because other people are laughing. When other people are doing it with you, you just feel it's infectious. You have to go along with it. It's everybody together. We're all as one. We're like one big group together. It seems like we're all trying to be in the same place as one. I don't know if it's the same thing in a circus. I think it is really sort of a little bit different in the way that it works. But it's certainly true in the theater itself. Although the theaters were different, there were religious aspects and religious items that they were using in their theaters back in the day. There was something a little bit strange of going in and being involved with this type of thing. Is it usher? Ramosh says it's not usher. There probably are poskim that say that it's usher in some way, shape, or form. But Ramosh says it's not usher, and that seems to be the minig of Klal Yisrael in America, without a question, that it's not something that's considered usher. But nonetheless, doesn't it seem a little bit strange? Doesn't it seem a little bit strange to stand at a bar and your team gets a touchdown or shoots a goal or something else, and then all of a sudden there's just a cheer and you're slapping hands with all the non-Jewish guys that are there, and it's just, we won! We're together! To us! That doesn't seem strange. I was at a wedding 3 years ago when the Blackhawks won their second championship, and the game that they won the championship on was at the wedding itself, right after the first dance. So all of a sudden, in the middle of nowhere, I don't know if anybody remembers what happened in the game, but I remember because this is what happened. I didn't get to watch it. I wasn't able to watch it, but I was able to hear it. So what happened is they were down 2-1 or something like that with a minute and a half to go in the game. They were down 2-1. And they scored a goal with a minute and a half to go. And they scored another goal 30 seconds later. So I'm sitting at this wedding. I'm sitting at my table. A bunch of rabbis around, right? And all of a sudden you hear this roar. There are 8 waiters and about 25 guys all hanging around one table with one guy who has a phone the size of probably not your phone, right? Sitting around, like basically a tablet, that's sitting there, and he's watching, they're all watching the game together, and they're all going over, right? And all of a sudden they score one goal, and all of a sudden you're like, at the wedding itself. You hear that? So like all the rabbis got up and they laughed a little bit, right? It was funny and whatever, right? And then 30 seconds later, you hear an even bigger, it was crazy. And you look around, and these waiters are going crazy. And everybody's like hugging each other and like picking them up. I'm like, you're at a wedding. You'd think you'd be more happy. But no, this is the happiest moment of their lives. And they're all like shaking each other's hands like, oh, unbelievable job. And they're sitting there. That doesn't seem weird. It doesn't seem strange at all to you that everybody's getting together and you're watching a bunch of guys you probably wouldn't recognize in the street. You certainly would not want to hang out around. Certainly wouldn't want any people to hang out around. And these are the people you're cheering on. This is it. It's amazing. But I know I have the same issue. It's not like I don't like sports. I love sports. But nonetheless, it's strange, isn't it? Shouldn't it hit you that that's a little bit strange? The point, however, is not just saying to yourself, you know what, you're right, I'm never going to do that ever again. It's knowing that you're still different and be willing to show that you're different. When you walk on a plane, don't walk on a plane thinking, I'm a businessman and people will see me as a businessman. Walk on a plane thinking, I'm a Jew and I'm different from every other person that's going on this plane. I'm not hiding it. I'm not going to cover up my hat. I'm not going to cover up my kippah. I'm not going to cover up the way I look. I'm going to show to everybody, I am a Jew. I am completely, completely different from everybody here. When Yosef Atzadik came down to Mitzrayim, he eventually blended in. He took clothes from Paro. He took a revida zov, a massive bling from Paro. was willing to wear a ward around his neck. He spoke their language to the point where the Sultan themselves could not recognize a person who looked exactly like their father. It's an unbelievable Rashi that they left him and he didn't have a beard. And now he had a beard. If he had a beard, then he looked even more like Yaakov. Yosef said it would have looked exactly like Yaakov Avinu with a beard on. So they should have looked immediately at him and said, well, in a land where everybody else is African, all of a sudden there's this Mediterranean looking dude who has a beard who looks exactly like that. Exactly like that. And we sent him down to Mitzrayim, didn't we? Oh, and he got up there because he translated dreams. You'd think somebody would ask the question. It's such an obvious thing, such an obvious idea. But Yosef HaTzadik was so blended in, that they couldn't recognize it. And for him, Yosef HaTzadik was unaffected by that. His kids were unaffected by that. But his grandkids and great-grandkids and great-great-grandkids, because of that original blend, and because they started becoming more Egyptian citizen-y, and because they considered themselves part of the Egyptian culture, eventually, his kids blended in so much that according to the Medrash, they were the four-fifths of Bnei Yisrael that died during Makas Choshech. Four-fifths of Bnei Yisrael died. They didn't even know they were Jewish. They were the four-fifths of Bnei Yisrael, who were the great-grandkids of Yosef, the great-great-grandkids of Yosef, who had propagated so much throughout Mitzrayim, they forgot who they were. They didn't know what they were. The Jews who stayed in Goshen, in their own city, wearing their own clothes, keeping their own names, doing whatever it was, they were the slaves. There were other Bnei Yisrael, citizens of Mitzrayim, who were wealthy individual aristocrats from Yosef HaTzadik that were totally different. They didn't know they were. The way this Maimar Chazal, the way this Medrash is learning, it's below Yoda as Yosef, is not just referring to Paro. He didn't know he was Yosef, refers to the children of Bnei Yisrael, the four-fifths of Bnei Yisrael that never made it out, that thought that they were Egyptians just like anybody else. The 30,000 Bnei Ephraim took on the Midos, the Hanhagos of Mitzrayim. This is the Midah and the Hag of Mitzrayim. We can win. We'll fight. We'll be fine the way we are. When they left early, 30 years early, those men of Ephraim, they left thinking that they could be like Mitzrayim, and that's when they died. It's things where once you start getting involved and you can't differentiate between you and the person who's not Jewish next to you, it's not necessarily about you, it's your family, it's everything about you. You start losing it. It's little by little, you're no longer the Jew. You're no longer the Yid that you know you're supposed to be. That's where Chukas HaAkum becomes so scary. That's where it becomes such a strong thing. I'm on the plane yesterday, and I got on the plane in the morning. It was Delta flight. There was about 7 people on the flight. I don't know how Delta makes any money, but there were 7 people on the flight. Each one of us got 3 rows to be able to put my bag up, my leg in one row. It was unbelievable how few people that were there. And a guy comes up to Rebbe Ginsberg and me, and comes up to us and says, me and Rebbe Ginsberg, sorry, grammar. So he came up to me and Rebbe Ginsberg and said to us, are you part of the Skokie Yeshiva Kollel? So I said, we're part of the Skokie Yeshiva altogether, yeah. And he said, oh, I'm Jewish also. That pride, it's there. It's there. That want, that drive, that desire to be there. It's good to have that. To not be able to have that hide. Now, Elkanah Wasserman takes it to an absolute extreme. To an unbelievable extreme. When a Agudas Yisrael put together their second convention in Poland, right, the first one was in Vienna, the second was in Poland, Rav Chana Wasserman venerated Rav and Rosh Yeshiva Baranovich, and everybody knew him as the Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim, got up to protest something that he had seen over the past few years. Something that he felt somebody had to say something about. So he got up, and he said, here's what I saw. He got up and explained to everyone. He said, everyone should realize that they're doing something which is wrong, and they don't know what they're doing, and they don't even know why they're doing it. And a Jew should always know why they're doing something. So I'm going to explain to you what it is, and I'm going to explain to you why it's done, and you'll realize why it's not a good thing to do. It's just simple then. He went on to say, clapping hands is a problem and is chukos hagoyim. Clapping hands after a speech is chukos hagoyim. Why? Said Rav Elchanan. He said, there's no point to it. All it does is it excites the mind and gets everyone into it. So if you have a big speech and the guy ends off and everyone gets together and you clap, of that, everybody feels like they have to join in with. And everyone together feels like that was a great move. That was a great thing. It becomes emotional. It's no longer intellectual when you're clapping hands together. It's emotional. You get involved. You're so into it along with everybody else. He said, imagine, if you want, imagine if a bunch of doctors are sitting down and they're sitting there discussing a rare form of cancer. Nobody knows what to do about this rare form of cancer. And each doctor has to sit down and say what they've seen, their experiences, what they feel you should be doing. And each doctor gets up, says his piece, and afterward. And then one doctor gets up, after he finishes his piece, everybody gets up and starts like that. It's not the time nor place for clapping. That doesn't make any sense. Why would you clap then? They don't want to hear that. It's not the place for clapping, said Rohana Wasserman. You don't do that. We have to realize, said Rohana, when discussing all the issues that we have at this convention, these are issues that are affecting our total world, everything about us. These are important issues. This is like curing cancer, he said. And if a person is doing that, the last thing we need is emotion. We have to sit down and think about these things. We have to have Yishuv Adas. What should we be doing right now? Is this the best thing for us? Is it not the best thing for us? When speaking about critical issues, there is no reason for clapping. And he banned it. Stops people from clapping at the convention. Think about that for a second. Even consider. Did you ever think there was anything wrong with clapping? Did you ever think that there could be anything wrong with clapping? But we don't think about that. Nobody does. Who would think about it? Who would think that it's even a havamia, that there could be something wrong with it? That's what Rabbi Hanan is trying to say. He tried giving another one that if you just say anything, like I'm going to eat breakfast now, and everybody starts clapping. Sounds like it's important. It's not important. There's nothing there. There's nothing to talk about. I always thought that there was a bunch of things that are strange that we do. That I'm not so sure whether they could be considered in the category of chukzakum, but it's at least something to start thinking about. You've probably all in your lifetime stood up for a chasam and kallah at a Jewish wedding. Is that us? Is that from us? Did we start that? I found it interesting. I went to a not from wedding not too long ago. Nobody stands up for the chasam and kallah. Nobody does. I have no idea what Christians do, and don't try proving to me from weddings and movies, because that doesn't help at all. Right? What do Christians do at weddings? Do they stand up when the chasam and kallah walk into the room? Is it because they're doing a mitzvah? Is that the reason why? What are we doing? Now, is that a chok that non-Jews do for a reason? Is it just something that they like doing because it looks nice? Or is that something we can take on for ourselves because that's kosher? I'm not answering you. I'm asking you. What do you think? At a wedding not too long ago when I was sitting by Rav Ephraim Tversky, I was sitting down next to him and I was talking to him, when the chasam came in the room, so I stood up a little bit, right? The chasam came in, so I stood up a little bit. Rav Tversky sat down, right? He was sitting. I said, what happened? So he said, I figured that you were going to sit, so I was going to sit with you. So when the kallah came in the room, I sat down and he stood up. I said, what's going on? He said, I didn't want to be the only one sitting this time. Apparently that would tell me that it's a little bit different when it comes to it. We give gifts to kids on Pesach for Afikoman. For years I thought that was based on Easter. Like letting them find eggs, right? Looking for the eggs and that they got gifts afterward when they found the eggs and going through. I always thought that it was based on Easter. It was only this year that I found that it's actually based on a real minute. We left Mitzrayim with riches, so we give the kids riches when they leave Mitzrayim by eating the Afikoman. That's the minute for it. Now, I don't know if that came after Easter. I have absolutely no idea which came first, the gifts that come first or that. But it's amazing to think about. Just think about it. Why are we doing this? I know we're so used to it, but why are we doing it? Let's even go further. I don't want to bring up Hanukkah here. There's no reason to bring that up for right now. But to at least consider it. What are we doing? Is this the right thing to do or not? And if it is, great. If it's not, who are we asking? What are we going to do about this? Just, again, not as a joke almost, why do we eat gefilte fish dipped in chlorine? Where does that come from? Who decided to smash up a fish, including the bones, put it into a little tiny, little glob of nothingness, put it on a plate with a little bit of horseradish and say, I'm sure you'll be okay with this.
What is that? Where did that come from? Where did that come from?
Where did a matzo ball come from? If you don't eat your brooks.
Where did it come from?
Where do these mean? It's just a concept of starting to think through what are you doing and why. The true key is to act like a Jew who believes in God and knows that we're different. And that's what this parsha is all about. Making us different. All of Kedoshim is about that. Allowing us to become different. How to give mussar. How to love your friend. How to give to the poor. How to not take revenge. How to fear your parents. How to do everything. These laws are all connected in the sense that they make us different. Different. Kedoshim does not mean holy necessarily, but to be separated from the others, to be removed from everybody else, to create a nation of Mamlechas Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, to make us as a nation that is set apart from everybody else there. And these are some of the means to do so, but it's so important to be able to sit there and say to ourselves, what are we doing? And to start thinking about it to ourselves right now. Why am I doing this? So when my kids ask, or when your own tell me to ask, what are we doing? What are you doing this for? You can answer them honestly. And I don't know if it's a good answer for now, but to keep asking and asking and asking. Figure out what's going on here. What is our point? What are we doing with everything we do? Start considering that. Maybe then we'll try to understand why these other things are not chukos hagoyim. Why there are certain differences between what we do and what they do. What's the difference between us? We should be totally separate from them. We should allow ourselves to be the true Mamlechas Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh. Shabbat shalom, everybody.